News. You only have one chapter, so you need to know it. We'll go through the legislature and the legislative process. Today's the structure and organization. The legislative process, it's not completely clean like that, but close enough. Then we'll review next Monday and have the exam. Yes, ma'am.
You don't have the notes for today's lecture uploaded.
I know.
Okay.
They will be up today.
Okay.
Right. I just didn't get around to it. You know what a round to it is? It's about like that.
Okay.
I just wasn't able to get to it. Actually, it was not cooperating with me Friday. It was something. But what do legislative bodies do? Basically, four key things. They're supposed to articulate. Do you remember, everybody know what the word articulate means? To give voice to the general demands of society. But at the same time, they represent the interest of specialized groups. Can you see a conflict there? Does everybody see the conflict? If you are solely focused on society's needs, plain, clear, and simple, then the various specialized sectors, the interest groups, are going to feel left out. And they're likely to get serious about it in the next election. Frame and give approval to the laws, and then allocate the resources, generally through the process of taxing and spending, but also through regulations, laws, etc. Now, how do we get representatives? I'm going to take a little bit of time. First off, the Texas Senate has always had single-member districts. From the time the Constitution was written, 1876 Constitution was written, Texas used single-member districts. Fair enough, for the Senate. It started out with single-member districts in the House. But as counties began to urbanize, like Harris County, Dallas County, and they were entitled to more than one representative, the decision had to be made, how will those representatives be elected? And what they did was they went with the at-large system so that all of the representatives from an urban county would be elected by all of the voters of the urban county. There's advantages to that and disadvantages to that. What's the disadvantage? Does the minority ever get a chance to have representation in that particular situation, particularly if the minorities tend to be clustered in different areas of that county? The majority voters of the county will select all of the representatives. Now, when we get to the discussion of municipal government, that same question comes up. How should city councils be allocated? On a multi-member at-large basis, are on a single member district basis. Is this making sense to you? Up until the 1970s, Texas used multi-member at-large representatives for the urban areas. Then the United States Supreme Court decided, in fact, this a U.S. District Court in Dallas decided that, and it was very obvious, that this was a system that deprived minorities of representation and that we would go to single member districts. Now, when you draw those lines, you have to make some decisions to make. Are we going to cluster or keep economic, social, racial, ethnic, religious communities intact, or split them up? Are we going to deny them representation or not? There is currently pending a case before the federal district courts about the current redistricting system in Texas. It was definitely gerrymandered. There's two ways. We could get off on a very lengthy discussion of how to gerrymander and what gerrymandering is all like. And I need to put a little disclaimer in here and let you know something. In 1965, the legislative session of 1965, a little history before that. In 1964, the Supreme Court ruled in Kilgarland versus Martin that the Texas system of at-large multi-member systems was Well, there were two things that created a problem. One was the at-large multi-member system, and the other was a provision in the Texas Constitution that limited urban counties to no more than one state senator, regardless of their population. So Harris County, which had a population, a 1960 population of 1,243,158 people, and you're going to wonder how I know that figure exactly, and I'll explain it to you in a minute, had one state senator rather than the four to which it would have been entitled. It also was kind of shorted on congressional representatives. It should have had three. It only had one. And then on top of that, it should have had 19 House members, but there was a provision in the Texas Constitution that said no urban county would be entitled to more than seven representatives until its population had reached 700,000 people. And after that, it only got one per 100,000, although the ratio for the rest of the state was about one for 50,000. I don't expect you to memorize those numbers, okay? That meant that Harris County should have had 19 representatives, but it only had 12. Now, I was teaching at Sam Houston State my first year to teach in college that year when that decision was handed down. I had worked for Senator Cole, I think you all know that, as an administrative assistant in 1963, and he called me up, and or had his administrative assistant call me up and say, are you willing to come back and work in 1965? Got to do redistricting. Senator Cole was blind, I think I told you that. Blind men don't handle maps real well. And gosh, this was an opportunity of a lifetime. You know, political scientists usually get to see the redistricting process from the outside, not from the inside. And here I was going to have the opportunity to help redistrict the largest county in the state of Texas. Think I could pass that up? Not on a bet. Of course, that left me with this little minor problem. How was I going to support myself in the fall of 1964? But Senator Cole helped me get provided for a teaching assistantship at University of Houston, and I on my own had gotten a job teaching part-time at Houston Baptist College. It was her second year. Let me tell you a funny. On Friday before I'm supposed to go to work at Houston Baptist, Dean H.B. Smith calls me up and says, can you come over? We need to talk about something. And I said, Dr. Smith, if you're going to fire me, do it on the phone. I'm so poor right now, I can't even afford to buy the gas to drive across town. He said, oh no, son, I think you'll be a whole lot happier with this. So I got over there, and their economics teacher had been in a car wreck. And this was the days before seat belts and airbags, and hit his throat on the steering wheel, and the doctor said he wouldn't be able to teach until the spring semester. Said, if you'll teach the economics class and do the economics core lectures, we'll make it a full-time job. Manna from heaven. One minor problem. In my entire college career, I'd had exactly one course in economics, and that was a course on fiscal policy, government fiscal policy. But I said, have you looked at my transcript, Dr. Smith? He said, yes, I have. And I pointed out to him the obvious fact that I really was not prepared to teach economics. He said, that's all right, son. We figure you can probably read faster than they can. So that was the one and only time I've ever taught economics. Sort of a simple, another funny story on that. After I got through the first day, I had a friend that was teaching economics. He loaned me a lot of stuff to get started. This young fella came bouncing up to me, you know, the really eager beaver type. Said, I had two courses in economics at Lamar High School, which at the time was a really high-powered high school. I spent all summer reading the textbook, and I have real questions to ask you. Needless to say, my heart sunk almost to my toenails. So I said, come over to my office. We need to talk. Well, I discovered there's nothing I could teach him, absolutely nothing. He could have taught the course. Says, how would you like to do an independent study? Fine. So we hit upon a topic that we could both agree on, which was utopian political philosophers of the 19th century. I knew something about that from political science background. And he did a magnificent paper, about 60 pages. He spent time in the Rice Library, the University of Houston Library, not the Houston Baptist College, because I don't think they had more than 50 books in their library at that time. Certainly not on economics. Anyway, he turned in a 60-page paper, which was probably could have been a master's thesis without a problem. Needless to say, he made an A of the course. The rest of the story, and then we'll get down to text back to the legislature. 10 years later, I'm at a social sciences convention in New Orleans, and he comes bouncing up. He's just finished his PhD the year before, finished his PhD in economics from University of Chicago, which is one of the high-power schools of economics. He had a grin on his face from ear to ear. He said, "Would you like to know what I did in my dissertation, now?" He said, "I narrowed it down a little bit." Any rate, to get back to the story. So we had to redistrict Harris County, and Senator Cole set up some very clear guidelines on this thing, which were designed to keep us out of court. We were not going to violate racial, ethnic, economic communities. They were going to be kept intact insofar as was possible. The lines were going to be geographically consistent. None of these things where you go wee, all over the place. Okay, so now what is the only system of representation that is constitutional? Single member districts. Got it? Both the House and the Senate. Now, when we talk about what roles representatives play, various political scientists come up with various approaches to this, but probably the most consistent approach is delegate, advocate, trustee, and then a few throw in the politico role, which is a combination of the three. A delegate votes as they think their district wants them to vote. Their own personal beliefs and ideas are secondary. The trustee votes consistent with their personal beliefs, and to the extent that they worry about what's going on in the district, they do that when there's sufficient pressure. But here's your problem as a representative, senator, either one. How do you know what your district wants? How many of you are really familiar with most of the legislation that was introduced in the last session of the legislature? No, the 5,000 bills. Now, it takes money to get elected, and it takes workers to get elected. And if you are voting in such a way as to reflect the wishes of your major supporters and or contributors, that makes you an advocate for their interest, does it not? So which role would you take?
Really,
I guess, would depend on the circumstances, wouldn't it? If your district clearly articulates a particular position, you'd be an idiot not to pay attention to them, wouldn't it? If you've got major supporters that are really, really, really hung out on a particular issue, you've got to decide if it's in the best interest of your district and your best and consistent with your views whether you support them or not. And there are times when you have to simply tell them, "No, what you're asking is a violation of my trust." I'm not going to downplay the conflict. It can be real on occasion. Have any of you ever read John F. Kennedy's Profiles in Courage? Okay, write down somewhere when you finish your schooling and want to start your education. Read Kennedy's Profiles in Courage. In that, he outlines the biography of a number of political figures who knew that doing the right thing was probably going to end their political careers. But they had the courage to do it. You will find it a very interesting book, Profiles in Courage by John F. Kennedy, the same as our President of the United States who was assassinated. All right, let's do the boring stuff, okay? We'll get it as fast as possible. The Texas Senate has 31 members elected for four-year terms. They overlap, except they don't overlap. Everybody runs in the session in the year following the census. In other words, in 1992, every member, well, 2002, every member of the Texas, or 2012, every member of the Senate would run, and then they draw for four and 2 and 4 year terms. And there's always a question, which is better, to get the 2 year term or the 4 year term? Now, that means that they're staggered. The House member, however, have 2 year terms. All of them are elected at the same time. Fair enough, 2 year terms. The Texas legislature meets in regular session 140 days every 2 years, beginning in January of the odd numbered year. Now, there's kind of a waggish thing that was posted around in the legislature. Are you sure the Constitution didn't say only 2 years ever 140, ever 2 days 140 years? The legislature can be called into special session by the governor for a 30-day time. There is no limit to how many special sessions a governor can call. But the legislature cannot consider anything other than the stuff that the governor had included in the call of the session. In other words, they're strictly limited, with one exception. They can consider a bill of impeachment. So if the governor got to be too overpowering, they could probably theoretically entertain removing him from office. Now, some organizational issues. Since 1876, we want a citizen legislature. There are only a handful of legislatures among the urban states that still use quasi-citizen legislature. That is to say, and we'll look at what constitutes a citizen legislature in just a second, versus professional legislature, and the degree of partisan organization, partisan versus nonpartisan. So let's look at citizen versus professional. Generally, the hallmarks of a citizen legislature is we don't pay them hardly anything. And the sessions are relatively limited. They're just taking time off of their regular job to be in the legislature. Although, if you do it right, it's almost a full-time job. And back in 1963, when I first worked in the Texas legislature, the concept of limited staffing was absolutely true. They had to wring their hands and do a whole bunch of hard thinking, and finally the committee of the legislature that allocated money decided that since Senator Cole had 1,243,158 people to represent, and he was blind, he needed an extra secretary. So they gave him an extra secretary, and I was it. Guess how many people to represent 1,243,158 people we had on our staff in 1963?
One.
There were three secretaries.
I was gonna say
three secretaries, of which one of whom was a part-time secretary, and I was theoretically a full-time secretary, although he decided that I was really his administrative assistant and called me that. Now, how many staff members does a member of the Texas legislature have now? It depends on the district and depends on how many committees they're on, but you'll find it interesting to go on to the Texas legislature website and look at the staffs of senators and representatives. Representatives usually have about 5 or 6 staff members. Back then they had one secretary. And now, senators usually have staffs that range about 10 to 15, depending on what their responsibilities are. And they're a chief of staff for a senator makes a pretty good salary now. It's a profession. A professional legislature, full-time members, no limits on the length of the sessions, and staffing that's pretty consistent with the staffing of the Texas legislature now. If there's one place, now don't go away mad, if there's one place where the Texas legislature really doesn't fit as a citizen legislature, it's in the staffing. It is staffed just like most of the professional legislatures now. Okay? There's no way they could handle the workload if that was not the case. Is there a problem with that? What do you think it is? Who's really doing most of the work?
The secretary.
You know, the honest, if you do any lobbying with the Texas legislature, the first thing you want to do is make sure you get to know the staff people real well. Because the amount of time that the member has is limited, and quite frankly, they are just like a guy who's juggling so many balls at a time, they really don't have time to focus on any one particular ball. So if you can get through to their chief of staff or their person who's the committee staff and get them educated, you have a much better chance of educating the member. Oh, by the way, again, confession is good for the soul, may not necessarily be good for the pocketbook sometime, but I spent 6 years as the lobbyist for the Texas Community College Teachers Association back in the 1970s, so I got to know it from both sides, the administrative assistant side and the lobbying side. Lots of fun. Another question is partisan versus nonpartisan. In a partisanly organized legislature, and Congress is a good example of a partisanly organized legislature, parties are responsible for the election selection of the leadership, the committees, and the staffing of the committees. If you take a look at congressional committees, they have a majority staff and minority staff. Now, on the nonpartisan side, parties play a limited role in determining the leadership, the appointment of committees and chairs, and also the staffing. Okay, can I pick on you for a second? I'll let you ask me a question. Which of these is the Texas legislature? You just asked me that question, see? So I'm going to respond. Well, in the House of Representatives, the answer is we're still maintaining essentially a nonpartisan organization. Joe Strauss has managed to keep together a very well-balanced bipartisan. He's a conservative Republican, but he was elected with both Democratic and Republican support. And he is well-respected on both sides of the aisle, with one or two exceptions. There are some super conservative Republicans in the Texas legislature that ran a candidate against him. Didn't get many votes, as a matter of fact. They want to go to a totally partisan organization of the legislature. The following, I'm going to step out of my role as a teacher for a second and just kind of go into my observer. My grandmother used to say, "Be careful what you wish for, you might get it." On the Senate side, this time the Senate was organized on a much more partisan basis than it has been in the previous years under Dan Patrick. I'll give you an example. Patrick announced at the beginning of this session in 2015 that no Democrat would be a chairman of a committee. Well, one of the problems with that is some of the most knowledgeable people in particular areas happen to be the Democrats who had been chairing those committees. If there's one criticism that nearly everybody I know of has been making of this last session of the legislature, is so much of the institutional knowledge evaporated because of, first off, a lot of people who left the legislature and then people who were not in positions of leadership who had been in positions of leadership. One does not pop into a job like chairman of the education committee and understand everything there is to know about higher education or public education in Texas in 30 days. It takes years to build that kind of knowledge. So I'm going to tell you that the legislature is at the cusp of perhaps some major changes, or maybe not. We'll see what's going to happen. Is it going to go strictly to the partisan organization? Or will it return to its semi-nonpartisan status? I don't know the answer to that. Only time will tell. But can I pick on you for a second? I'm going to quote something, and you tell me what the rest of it was. Humpty Dumpty sat on a wall.
Humpty Dumpty had a
great
fall.
Humpty Dumpty had a great fall. Had a great fall. Yeah. And all the king's horses and all the king's men
could have put Humpty Dumpty back together.
Okay, you're wondering, why this dumb nursery rhyme, right? How many states have gone to a partisan organization and then gone back?
A lot.
Humpty is on the wall.
Humpty's still on the wall.
No state has ever gone to the partisan organization model and then reverted to the nonpartisan. Okay? And there's a number of them. When you study state, local government, particular legislative, there's a number of them. But once Humpty gets off that wall, you can't put him back together again. Are there advantages and disadvantages to each approach? I could probably bore you by trying to make a few. Now, in keeping with the citizen legislature, we pay legislators in Texas $7,200 a year. That's $600 a month. There's also a per diem, a daily expense allowance, and the IRS sets an amendment in the Texas Constitution which provided that the Texas Ethics Commission, remember them, the same people who do the lobby filing? Remember? Most of you got that answer right. A few people came up with Journeys of Paul answers. If you're a businessman, you do not have to account penny per penny per penny. If your per diem allowance is not greater than a certain amount. So we adopted rules that say the per diem allowance of Texas legislatures will be governed by the maximum per diem allowance that the IRS allows without having to require justification. I'm sorry, I would like to make it a lot simpler, but I can't. They get the same mileage as state employees when on legislative business, and probably the only thing about serving as a legislator that is super great financially is the retirement system. Now, I'm simplifying this a little bit because there are several levels of years of service. If you have at least 12 years of service, and if you've held other elected positions in state government, you can count those. You get 2.3% times the number of years of service times the salary of a district judge, which is $150,000 a year now. So as a legislator, you're only making $7,200 a year, but when you get ready to retire, we calculate it like you'd been making $150,000 a year. I'm thinking there's a great article out there that I may write one of these days, except for the fact that we don't have any really good journals to publish them in. Most legislators, if they're serious about it, will stay 10 or 12 years, and then they'll retire. Can you figure out why? That magic, if you stay less than 10, you don't get anything. They just give you your money back. So if you have like 6 years legislative service and it's really getting to be a hassle in terms of your overall income and blah, 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 is it worth staying the extra four? Yeah. Now what was this designed to do? The IRS treats this as a form of deferred compensation, as a matter of fact. What's the purpose? Well, before we adopted this retirement system, the average length of service for a House member was less than 4 years.
Huh.
What kind of institutional knowledge can you build up? What kind of ability to really deal with serious problems can you build up if you don't know what the heck you're doing?
True.
And I'm going to tell you, it takes one or two sessions to really get knowledgeable on any particular area, to know the rules, to know how to actually do things, to understand the issues. It takes a while, even if you're really studying it hard. If you're a freshman senator, you just got elected, you look around for somebody who's been working as a chief of staff or a key legislative aide who might not be employed, who's at least somewhat ideologically compatible with yourself, because they can certainly make your life a whole lot simpler. Now, what are the constitutional duties of the legislature? Obviously, to pass laws. They are the only body in Texas that can propose amendments to the Constitution. It takes a two-thirds vote. Now, this electoral function, I almost hate to have to discuss it. It's so limited, it's incredible. But hang with me. What happens if the governor dies, the governor-elect dies before he's sworn in? Now, everybody would say, oh, the lieutenant governor. No! Lieutenant governor can only take place after they've been sworn in. They were elected for lieutenant governor. So the only time the lieutenant governor succeeds to the office of the governor is after both the governor and the lieutenant governor have been sworn in. The legislature would pick a new governor. We've never had it happen in Texas that the governor-elect died between November and January. But if it were, the legislature is there to pick the governor. I almost hate to talk about the electoral function because I need a big asterisk up here and say it's never been used, but it's there. We're going to talk later about the Legislative Audit Committee and the Sunset Commission, both of whom play a very significant role in the directory and supervisory responsibilities in the state's finances area. Fair enough? So the legislature plays a really major role. To give you some idea, the governor of Texas has limited, we'll talk about this when we get to the governor, but has limited financial management authority. He can only exercise it in conjunction with the approval of the Legislative Budget Board, which is chaired by the governor, the lieutenant governor, and the speaker, four members of the Senate, four members of the House. So if the governor wants to move money around, he's got to go to the Legislative Budget Board and say, can I do this? And if they say no, that's it. End of sentence. They can investigate, and they can impeach and remove. They can impeach and remove any statewide elected official in Texas, plus any district judge. Got it? Now, what are the non-constitutional? Now, I didn't say unconstitutional here. This is non-constitutional. The Constitution just doesn't spell anything out on it. Constituency services. Now, in the abstract, constituency services doesn't mean much, does it? Helping out members of your constituencies that have problems with government. So let me tell a story which will illustrate a little bit of the constituency services point. In 1965, excuse me, in 1967, I was sitting at the desk. In 67, I went back and worked full-time for Chet Brooks. I had already trained somebody to be administrative assistant for Senator Cole, and Chet Brooks asked me to come back, and that sounded like a great idea because I was going to go back and work on my doctorate and got graduate work for the doctorate, so I worked for Chet Brooks in addition to taking 12 hours of graduate work. Dumb. Anyway, it's Friday afternoon, I'm sitting at the desk, Senator's already gone home. telephone rings. Secretary says, there's a line call for you on line one. If you get a call on Friday afternoon, you know it's not good. The story was simple. It was a fella in Houston who was a truck driver. Had moved to Texas from another state to take a job. Now in Texas you have to have that commercial driver's license. I mean the actual driver's license. You can't have a slip of paper that says you passed the test.
You have a CDL on your license.
He had gone on vacation with his wife, first vacation they'd had in years, got back expecting to have the driver's license in his mailbox, no driver's license.
Well,
so he's
and the
people said, you know, no license, no job.
You gotta go in and take the test for you to get the.
So he called us. People told me, make a long story short, I called over to the driver's license bureau, got a hold of the guy who is the, I didn't start with one of the clerks, I started with the top of the line. It's one of the advantages to being a senatorial aide, you can start with the guy at the top of the division that will listen to you. He said, I'll check on it and let you know what I find out in 10 minutes. Well, he told me a lie. He called me back in 7. He said, the person who processes those expedited things was on vacation and nobody bothered to check her in-file. The license is being prepared even as we speak. It'll be ready in 15 minutes. Oh, great. How am I going to get it to him? This was before FedEx. He said, I asked him, I don't know how I'm going to get it to him. I hate to have to drive to Houston this weekend. He said, don't worry about it. We have a courier plane that leaves every Friday afternoon at 5 o'clock to take stuff to the Houston office. Tell him to be at the Hooks Airport at 7 o'clock and the pilot will hand it to him. That is constituency service. And they've got to say a whole lot about that agency. They went out of their way to help. But you know, it might have been that the senator served on the committee that was the overseeing committee for their particular division. I just not real sure. I might have had something to do with it. Is a pig's rear pork. All right, let's look at the structure of the House and Senate. The speaker is elected by the members, the entire members. There's a speaker pro tem who's appointed by the speaker, interestingly enough. I want you to notice something. In the House, the only official that the members elect is the speaker. In the Senate, the lieutenant governor is elected by the voters. And all of the other officers of the Senate are elected by the senators. Now, Dan Patrick tried to change that, and he hit a brick wall real quickly. The senators were not willing to divest themselves. In Texas, the lieutenant governor is the... Okay, let's back off. In Texas, the lieutenant governor possesses more power than the lieutenant governor of any other state. Do I need to repeat that again? Where does all of that power come from? It's not in the Constitution. We talk about the powers of the presiding officers. They appoint all the committees. It's in bold print for a good reason. They refer bills to committee. They decide which committee the bill is going to go to. They approve the appointment of employees. The House and Senate do things different. Oh, I want you to repeat a mantra with me. This is the first mantra that you need to learn if you're ever going to work in the Texas legislature. You ready? The House and the Senate do things differently. Can you repeat that for me? Come on. The House and the Senate do things differently. I didn't hear but what one or two of you say that. Come on. The House and the Senate do things differently. So if you have learned how the House works, guess what? You don't have a clue as how the Senate works. If you've learned the Senate, you've got a real learning process to learn how the House works. In the 1970s, as soon as the spring semester was over, I went to Austin and worked for a couple of 2 to 3 weeks for one of our state representatives, helping him get his bills through the Senate. House members don't really know how the Senate works real well. How many of you think that maybe I did? So I had a 90% success rate. Any bills he'd gotten out of the House, I got through the Senate. Recognize the speakers, House and the Senate. Do things differently. And rules on points of order. Now, where do the powers of the presiding officers come from? It's not in the Constitution, and for the most part, it's not in the statutes. It's in the rules of the House and the rules of the Senate. How many members does it take to make, of the 31 members, how many members does it take to make the rules of the Senate? 16. Of 150 members of the House, how many members does it take to make the rules of the House? 76. So if you are a speaker or a lieutenant governor, you better keep that in mind. You start to be too overpowering, you start to be too difficult. 16 of them can strip you of your power. Now, Texas, as I said, is the last state where the lieutenant governor has the kind of power that he has. Were we the only state where the lieutenant governor had that kind of power? No. What happened in the other states? Do you remember the line in one of the Old Testament books, I believe it's the book of Exodus, and there grew up a Pharaoh who had not known Joseph? You get a majority in the Senate who are not thrilled with either the partisanship or the method of operation of the lieutenant governor. They can strip him of that power. And in most of the states where that's happened, the lieutenant governor ends up having about the same power as the vice president of the United States, which is what? They can vote in the event of a tie, and they preside in ceremonial occasions. End of sentence. How many times does Joe Biden visit the U.S. Senate? On ceremonial occasions, and if and when there happens to be a tie vote. That's it. Does everybody catch the point I'm trying to make? I really and truly believe that the power of the lieutenant governor is an anachronism. That it's something left over from 19th century, early 20th, the 20th century. And it's probably going to change ultimately. Now, previous lieutenant governors have preserved the power of the lieutenant governor, and I've known a lot of previous lieutenant governors of the state of Texas. Some of them on a first name basis, some of them maybe not so. But they made dang sure that they never stepped on more than 16 senators' toes at a time. And you tread lightly. It's going to be interesting. Now, what kinds of committees? We're going to look at the committee structure of the Texas legislature. I asked a question on a test one time, what is a standing committee? I guess I shouldn't have asked that question, because the response I got from the student was, this is a committee where they've taken all the chairs out, so everybody has to stand. No. You ever see the sign that says, don't drive into standing water? How can water stand if it doesn't have legs? Have you ever stopped to think about this, sort of the dumb things we do with the English language? I was peeling some squash last night, my wife to cook. Why do we say we peel squash, but you unpeel a banana? Anyway, what's a standing committee? It's a permanent committee. Now, is it really permanent?
No.
It's permanent for that session. Because how are the committees of the legislature established? in the rules of the House and the rules of the Senate. Okay? Then there are special or investigatory committees, which are created with a special mandate by the House or by the Senate. Interim or study committees that are created by resolution to operate during, what's an interim? Period between the sessions. Interim committees. And then there are three statutory committees. What does statutory mean? If we don't use it in connection with another four-letter word, what does statutory mean? Established by law. So we have three committees that are established by law. The Budget Board, the Legislative Council, and the Audit Committee. I'm going to save those for when we get to the financing system of Texas. Fair enough? With one exception. The Legislative Council was established in the 1950s to do research and bill drafting for the legislature. It has expanded rather significantly. How many of you have gone to the Texas Legislature online website? I have an extra credit project which I will have posted by the end of the week, in which you can use the Texas Legislature online website. That's maintained by the Legislative Council. Now, this is not something you need to know about for a test, but Texas has one of the best legislative websites of any state in the Union, and I've compared all of the major urban states, California, Florida, Illinois, New York. Of all the major urban states, Texas has the best legislative online website. Any bill that was introduced in the legislature, there's a copy of the bill posted. The analyses of it, you want to find out what the professional analysis of it, record of the votes, and guess what? If you can't happen to go to Austin to listen to the committee hearings, they're recorded and posted. So you can see what happened during the committees. Takes a tremendous amount of work to do that, and it's well done. Now, the two budget committees are the Budget Board and the Audit Committee, and we're going to spend more time with those when we get to the budget of Texas. Staffing. House and the Senate.
Do things differently.
The Senate Administration Committee figures out how much staff a senator needs based on seniority, how many committees they are chair of, the district, how far they are away from their district, and gives them a figure amount of money. House avoids that problem. Everybody gets the same amount of money, with a little extra stipend if you happen to be the chairman of a committee. For office expenses in the Senate, you get reasonable expenses, and who decides what's reasonable? The Senate Administration Committee. The House, you got X amount of money, this is what you can do. And the interim, same arrangement, but the amounts are reduced. You don't have as much staff, you don't have as much money to work on. Now, I am not going to ask you to memorize the committees of the House or the Senate. You can look those up, Tonto. And the House and the Senate, and by the way, this number changes from session to session. And if you want to study the history of this, I'll tell you how to do it. We've gone through several reforms. When I worked as a legislative aide in the 1960s, the Senate had ungodly number of committees, 31 members and 42 committees. Senator Cole was on three different committees. It was the hardest thing in the world for me to just keep him lined up and telling him which committee he had to go to on which day and what bills were in the committee. I had decided at the beginning of the session I was going to read every bill that was introduced. Well, after a week I gave up on that. And then I decided that I would read every bill that had been referred to one of the committees that Senator Cole was on. And about another week or so, I gave up on that. And then I finally just decided I'd read all the bills that we'd introduced and all the bills that the senator was interested in. And that was almost a full-time job. There are three non-substantive committees. Do I need to explain what a substantive committee is? These are committees that hear bills and make decisions on bills. Administration, Committee of the Whole, Senate, and Nominations. No bills ever go to those committees. But you can figure it out. Nominations deals with what? Nominations of people to be approved by the governor. By the governor's appointed to be approved. Committee of the Whole, Senate. This is kind of an interesting thing. The House doesn't do that. Remember, the House and Senate do things differently. Committee procedures are less complicated and less involved than how things operate on the Senate floor. So if they want to debate or discuss something without going through the rigid procedures that are necessary when you're voting on legislation, they dissolve into a committee of the whole Senate and handle it as a committee. But they can't vote on it to approve it because it's only a committee. It's kind of an interesting thing. And then there's the Senate Administration Committee, and we've already looked at what they do. They handle the finances and who gets what kind of thing. And right now, House has 36 standing committees. Five of them are procedural. Calendars, local and uncontested, administration. Am I going to ask you to memorize those? No. Of course, you've got your list when you take the test. Which committee, which non-substantive or procedural committee in the House has absolutely no equivalent in the Senate?
The
Calendar Committee. There is no Senate Calendar Committee. Huh? So, how do they decide which bills will come to the floor of the Senate? Well, guess what? We're going to deal with the legislative process next time around. But the House and the Senate
do things differently.
Again, there are the three statutory committees, and each of them has excellent, excellent websites. Let me just give you an example of that. This is the Legislative Budget Board website. You want to look at the budget? By the way, one of the absolutely most interesting things you can do is bring up, and notice how long it takes to load, the Texas Fiscal Size Up. When we get to talking about the budget, this is the document that I use extensively. All right? It takes a minute, or better. Anytime you're ready, CB. Come on, do your thing. I'm not sure what's going on here. It worked last night. Okay, the hamster's still going around. While we're waiting for it to come up, let me give you a piece of extremely good advice. Everybody perked up. Do not ever hit the print key on this document. Unless you want to burn up your printer and use about a ream and a half of paper. It's about 700 pages long. Now, the good news is it is well tabbed. You can go to a particular section without any problem. You don't have to print the whole thing. Well, I'm not sure what's happening here. Maybe it doesn't have enough memory to deal with it. So we're gonna drop that out. Let me go. Go back to this. Oh, come on. We don't need to do this. It's a fun thing. Am I planning to make administrative assistants out of anybody so you go through it in detail? No. But I would like you to be in a position so when you're reading in the newspaper about what's going on, you have some idea of what's going on. Okay? You've been good. If you came in late,